back on the Jefferson Exchange here. If you read newspapers or watch movies, if you have neighbors or you have a family, if you live on planet Earth, you'll have to come to terms with violence, especially against women and children, and really anyone being controlled by someone else. Our guests today say we, as in you and me and everyone we know, don't get to choose whether or not we play a role in this culture of violence. But we do get to choose which role we play. And here's where education comes in. In Josephine County, it's being provided by the Women's Crisis Support Team, the volunteer-run center that has been founded for people in crisis through 24-hour phone support and a shelter for survivors' abuse, is also providing prevention services. Today, we're joined by a couple of people who do that kind of education. They're staffers with the Women's Crisis Support Team. Ray Dinkins is a prevention program coordinator there.
That's correct.
Thank you so much for being here. I believe we also have Amy Harbolt on the line. She's a prevention educator for the team. Amy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
And we may be joined in a moment by a graduate of Grants Pass High School. We're hoping Brandon Trujillo will be with us in a moment. But we'll go ahead and start with Amy and Ray. Amy, before we talk about prevention, could you tell us more about the services that Women's Crisis Support Team provides in Josephine County?
Sure. Women's Crisis Support Team has three different departments. We have prevention, intervention, and safe shelter. We are the only agency in Josephine County that has a 24-hour crisis line, and we're teaching the prevention classes in the high schools. The intervention department goes out on police calls and hospital calls and assists clients in the courthouses. And our safe shelter houses approximately 17 people.
Wow. So it sounds like a lot of these services are keyed to people who are already in crisis. Ray, where does prevention of violence and in particular domestic violence fit into this picture?
Sure. Prevention of domestic and sexual violence are a core mission of Women's Crisis Support Team. Amy and I see ourselves as the leaders in the effort to put our organization out of business. And so we actually, our board and our organization has made it a pillar and a staple of the work that we provide to our community. And that involves raising awareness as well as instituting like true prevention measures that will change our community and change our culture to reject violence as an option for relating to each other.
You talk about training our culture here. What kinds of cultural norms support violence, support a culture of violence?
Sure. I mean, we see, especially in youth culture, a lot of media and a lot of social pressures to adhere to a strict code for both young men and young women that actually promote very stereotypical gender roles and that use force and coercion and power and control in relationships, whether that's peer-to-peer or intimate partner relationships. And so a lot of the work that we do is to kind of, more than anything, not tell students how to be or what to do, but to kind of shine a light on the message that's being continually promoted to them about how they should behave towards one another or act towards one another and help them make better choices and personal choices about the kinds of people they want to be rather than just following this kind of media and social narrative that's been given to them about the way they're supposed to behave.
So, Amy, how do you go about retraining something that is literally pervasive everywhere in society, this ideas and these images of violence, in particular violence against women?
Well, actually, for me, working with the young women, it's more of a matter of bringing awareness to the kids, like helping them dissect media messages, helping them dissect what they're learning through social media and through their peers, and to make them more aware of what's actually happening around them. And they themselves make the decisions to start thinking different and acting different.
if I can speak to that as well, our prevention work is really based on a youth empowerment model. And so the core of our way of thinking and our work is that youth are capable of making good decisions. Mm-hmm. Like all youth are good youth. And if we just give them the opportunity and the space to kind of try out some different ways of making their own decisions regarding their relationships and their relation to each other, outside of kind of that context of constant barrage of media and social pressure, that they actually make really good decisions. And so it's really kind of pulling back that curtain of, okay, here's the story that's being told to you. Mm-hmm. We don't even really tell them that they have to reject it. We just say, here's the story that's been told to you. Do you see this as a good model for relating to each other and relating, especially in your intimate partner relationships? Is this healthy? Or if you could do it different, would you do it differently? And then the question is, well, if... because many of them see it as unhealthy, the story that's been told to them. And so if we give them the power and the authority to make the choices in their lives, we find that they actually do make very good choices, and that they'll start to be really critical or more analytical regarding the way they see the world and the way they see things being told to them about how they should behave.
So where in the community in Josephine County are you able to connect with young people and talk about this message?
We have worked in all four high schools and one middle school in Josephine County, and actually the alternative high school as well, Gladiola High School. But currently our work is focused at Grants Pass High School and Gladiola High School campuses, where we're able to meet with students on a voluntary basis in small groups throughout the week, and have these discussions. We started this program about 8 years ago with a very small group of students, and it's grown over that time to include a very large portion of the student body at Grants Pass High School, as well as Gladiola, and then even recently has turned into a class for freshmen, for incoming freshmen at Grants Pass High School, where they get some exposure, not necessarily as in depth, but they get some exposure to the message that we're trying to share.
So the weekly class is voluntary. I would think you ask kids if they're interested, and then they sign up. Is that about how it works?
Yeah, the ongoing voluntary violence prevention groups are just kind of a word of mouth. Everybody's welcome. Our program has a very universal approach. In other words, we believe in the goodness of all students, but we also believe that all students are at risk. And so it's really interesting when we're out in public and we're talking and people want to ask us, do you work with at-risk youth? We say, of course we do. All youth are at risk. You know, we don't really use the prevention model to target a group of youth, and we don't work on a referral basis other than word of mouth beyond, between the youth. And so, again, starting 8 years ago with five young men, and this past school year, closing out our program with 140 students really speaks to the desire of the students wanting to engage in these kind of conversations and wanting to explore for themselves the way that they want to relate to each other.
So the program began, you just said, with five young men. It's grown to 140 students who are opting in to a violence prevention program in Grants Pass High School, Gladiola High School, too. Amy, when did the women, the girls, come into this picture, and how does that curriculum differ from the boys, although we haven't talked yet about what the curriculum is?
You know, that's actually a better question for Ray. I've been with the program for 4 years, and when I came into the program, the young women were already in it.
Okay, Ray, would you like to take that one?
Sure. So the way our relationships actually began with the school was through intervention. And so our intervention program had been called on to help a young lady at the high school who was going through some unhealthy relationship issues. And in the work of working with that young lady in some empowerment kind of programming, she was very eager to invite her friends, and suddenly there was a nucleus of young women who were working on prevention issues and how to make the community safer, but that's only one side of the equation. And so we immediately explored ways to begin a young men's group as well. And since then, it's kind of grown into this co-ed thing. And so so we don't, even though we have gender-specific groups that students can join as they see fit, you know, voluntarily, as we move more into the classroom-type setting, it's become co-ed, and that's even kind of more exciting for us as well. So that's how it kind of began with them.
Yeah, you got right to my next question there in terms of high school. Many of us have lived it. You're thrown in there. It's a pretty intensely co-ed situation. What are the reasons for separating genders in order to talk about relationships and how to have healthy ones? And what are the reasons to keep boys and girls together for that conversation?
I think the best way to kind of share that that experience would be sharing a story that happened at one of the campuses where we were working, and I was with a group of young men, and they were. It's always surprising as we communicate the energy that the students have for the work that we do, that the students were all drawn in. We were in a tight group. We're kind of talking about some issues that young men face, which are in a lot of ways different than some of the social and media issues that young women face. And we were all tight and down, and the boys are talking like almost in a huddle. And a young lady walks into the room with a slip from the office, and immediately, like, the guys all lean back and they're like, "Hey, what's up? How's it going?" And it got all kind of weird. You know, it was like a whole different vibe. And then she handed off the note and left the room, and they were like, "Okay, back to business." And I was like, wait a minute, what was that? You know, and why do we change given certain scenarios? And why do we put on a show? And so it's really at the core is like getting some honesty and getting some participation sometimes just requires them to be segregated in that way.
Uh-huh, in order to feel,
you know, it's safe for them to kind of talk and try things out and to work on things in that environment, and then move out and really try and to implement those things in a more social context, rather than being real and vulnerable and open in a place where, just like we were speaking earlier, that those social and cultural pressures to behave a certain way infiltrate our classes. You know, it's not like they're separate. It's not like, but our goal and our work is to create a safe environment where students can come to that place where they're trying to make decisions for themselves. And we've just found in our work, at least, that the gender-specific nature of the voluntary groups has been very helpful in that work and in that way. There's a vulnerability, for young men and for young women to say, "I'm going to try something a little different and act a little different and be a little different because I think it's right," and then go and do that, and maybe it's not successful the first time, and they come back and want to debrief that. Well, to do that in front of everybody is kind of a greater challenge than do that in front of a dozen of your closest peers, maybe in a gender-specific way. You know, does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. We're talking with Ray Dinkins, a prevention program coordinator with the Women's Crisis Support Team of Josephine County. Ray and his colleague Amy Harbolt, who's also on the line, work in Grants Pass High School with teenagers on preventing domestic violence and intimate partner abuse and assault before it happens. We have a caller on the line with experience in this field as well. Sandy in Mount Shasta, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm really glad I tuned in today because I moved to Mount Shasta 10 years ago. Prior to that, I was in Seattle, the greater Seattle area, doing domestic violence perpetrator treatment for 15 years. And I entered that field with the hopes that finally our culture was going to come to grips with the issue of violence. But the longer I spent in the field, the more dispirited I became when I left the field 10 years ago, I felt like we'd had about as much effect on the overall problem of violence against women in this country as water eroding rock over eons. And I personally feel that a big part of that is that the United States seems to be in love with violence as a tool for getting its way in the rest of the world. And when you grow up in a very militarized culture, I mean, I'm in my late 60s, so I know what I'm talking about. When I was a kid, it was pretty interesting to notice when I was the kids of that era, boys of that era, at the age of about 5, would start to come to grips with the fact that at some time in their life, later in their life, they may be called upon to go out and kill people as part of their masculine role. And the military and the police forces are the ones that have the highest rate of domestic violence of all. And but you guys give me hope. Before I sound too pessimistic, you guys give me hope. I think the approach you're using is awesome, and I support exactly what you're doing. I love everything you're saying so far. So keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I really appreciate that. And if I can give him a little bit of hope, the thing that I think, and Amy might echo this, is the thing that energizes us is when we go into schools, as particularly in the schools we're working in now, to work on these issues, the students gravitate to it themselves. I mean, a lot of the program and a lot of the things we do are really student driven, and I think that even the expansion of our program recently to include an all freshman class project really was because students made the demands that more students have exposure to this work. So the youth really seem to be gravitating towards the work, and a lot of people ask us how we got such a great foothold in the schools. It's because it's really been student led, and when we go in and we say, "Hey, we want to talk to you about these things," a lot of students will tell us, like, they'll say things like, "Where have you been? Like, we've been waiting to have this conversation," you know. And we see our work as just helping students overcome social and emotional barriers to education and to success, and they're kind of like, no one's really sat down and had these kind of conversations with us, and these are the things that are really impacting us the most. And we see a huge release and relief in them that then they go into class and they're successful students, and that's been the amazing thing. But if there's hope that I could provide and a response to the caller, is that the youth really are taking the lead in this, and we're very excited and also given hope by that.
Let's take another call. We've got John and Grants Pass on the line with a question. John and Grants Pass, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. So my question, I'm thinking about what you're doing, and has the rate really gone up over this, or was it just never reported? And I'll give you an example. I remember my father-in-law said that his dad, which is my wife's grandpa, right, Dietrich somebody, some German guy, and he said apparently grandpa kept track of everything they did wrong during the week, and on Saturday night they got the strap or they got hit or the paddle, and at least a couple of generations ago also beat their wife and nobody reported, nothing was ever reported. So what do you think? That's my question.
I think it's worth pointing out it wasn't even legally possible to rape your wife all that long ago. So, right. Ray or Amy, would one of you like to field John's comments?
Go ahead, Ray.
Well, what we find as we go into schools is that when you create a safe environment for people to share their experiences and you can rally some resources around that, that they do. And so I don't know that there's an increased rate versus years past, or if it's just more reporting. But we do know that, you know, in conversations with the schools we work with, we talk to them about the fact that when we go into schools and we make it safe for students to talk and to share their experiences, that some of them are going to be reportable that would not have otherwise been reported. And so I believe ultimately, on a personal level, I don't have professional numbers in front of me. On a personal level, I think the overall amount of abuse is actually down historically and over time. But obviously, when you create an environment where people feel safe and can share their experiences, you're probably going to initially at least have some increased reporting. And we see that as good. I mean, we don't take that as a bad thing. It means that we're actually creating an environment and a culture and a community where people are respected and honored and assistance is provided rather than having to hide the things that are happening to them.
Amy, I noticed in the literature about this program, this prevention and education program in Grants Pass High School and other places, this phrase, we all play a role. Can you talk more about the roles that exist in this conversation and what they are?
Sure. We actually, that campaign with the We All Play a Role was developed by our youth action team. And I kind of wanted to step back a little bit to what Ray was talking about with the gender-based groups and the pros and the cons to that. The young women definitely share more when they're just in a group of young women. But then you have the young women that are comfortable in the gender-based groups. And our co-ed groups, our very first co-ed group was our youth action team. And the youth action team is a selected group of kids that gets to start their own community awareness campaign each year. And it's voluntary, and they have to apply, and we choose approximately 10 to 15 students to be a part of that. The first year that we put the application together, there was a question on the application that just, I was curious. I wanted to know, if you're not trying to join the action team, could you tell me why? And there were multiple girls that put they were uncomfortable working in a co-ed situation.
Wow.
But we've now, and so they were definitely, like, intrigued with the idea, wanted to do something, but for one personal reason or another, they chose not to because it was going to be co-ed.
So much talk about Amy Harbold. I wish we had more time, but we don't. Thank you for joining us. Ray Dinkins of the Women's Crisis Response Team in Grants Pass, doing prevention programs in Josephine County Schools, hopefully changing the world through their curriculum. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.